There are more and more martyrs, and we've heard, you know, many months ago that the Israelis, you know, gave the settlers 200,000 rifles, and you see these rifles while you're walking around the West Bank.
We're going to have to leave it there now, but we're going to do part two right afterwards and post it at democracynow.org. And I want to ask you about your dedication to Dr. Rafet Al-Arir. His body was just found. Mohammed Al-Kurd, his new book is out today, Perfect Victims. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
There's no one-size-fits-all puberty experience. If you're trans, intersex, or non-binary, know that you're not the only one feeling confused. For some intersex people, puberty may start later than age 14. You might experience some of puberty's changes and not others, and your body may or may not go through puberty on its own. There are medicines you can take to help your body start the process, like hormone replacement therapy. Some people decide on hormones or surgeries to help their bodies match up to their gender identity, or how they feel inside about themselves. Your gender identity is real. You should be the one to decide what changes you want to make to your body. If you're transgender or non-binary, you may find that your puberty experiences don't line up with your gender identity or how you see yourself. That feeling can be uncomfortable, scary, and stressful. If that sounds like you, know that you're not alone. There are medicines you can take to delay puberty for a while. They're called puberty blockers, and they work like a stop sign by halting the hormones testosterone and estrogen that cause puberty changes like facial hair growth and periods. Puberty blockers are safe and can give you more time to figure out what feels right for you, your body, and your gender identity. You don't have to have all of the answers right now. So remember, it's all a work in progress, and it may take time to figure out what feels right to you, but talking to a trusted adult and a nurse or doctor may help. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, time for another edition of Off the Wall. Thank you. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Indeed.
Yeah, what's that movie? I'm trying to think of this. You know, the one where the parents go away for a holiday or something, and somehow the kids are left alone in the house, and they have some wild party and just completely trash the place, and just everything is out of control. And of course, you know, at some point the parents are going to come back, but you don't know exactly when. It's mayhem. It's madness. There's no rules. There's no regulations of any sort. And it's just complete pandemonium. Do you remember that film?
Well, I don't know. There could have been several.
Yeah, I think there probably are.
Based on that.
Yeah.
I'm
trying to remember the title, and I can't. I can't remember the exact title. But it's what we are going through right now in this country. That's what it feels like. It feels like the kids have been left alone in the house, and the parents somehow lost track of them. They're out someplace gallivanting.
It's like a house party?
It's worse than that, because, you know, these kids have no idea what they're doing, and they're just trashing everything. They're trashing everything, and you know, at some point, they're going to realize, oh my God, what have we done, and how do we fix this, or can we fix this? And at some point, the parents are going to return home, and I don't know what they're going to do when they get back. But they're not going to be happy. They're not going to be happy at all. Parents, if you're out there anywhere, I hope you're having fun. Please come back. Please come back and help us before the house burns down completely. Because I don't know how it happened, but these children are now running things, and it's like Lord of the Flies. Swear to God, Piggy is going to get killed any second now. We need some help. We really do. We're running out of food. There's someone needs to do laundry. There are no rules anymore. Nobody understands how it works.
Are you talking about the White House?
I don't know what I'm talking about anymore.
Wait, which house?
I turn on the TV every morning, and I wonder, is this, you know, the sci-fi channel back when it was good? Or is this really what's happening?
Oh, Mars Attacks.
I wish it would. Mars, if you're listening, please, any planet or star system. I know there's an asteroid coming, but that's not going to be for another few years.
We don't have that kind of time.
No, we need something now. No, seriously, Kyle, it's messed up out there.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I've been kind of thinking about, like, how to characterize it, and I think we get into this trap of absolute terms or, like, contrasting terms. And, like, let's just say, like, start out, there is no absolute, like, total good or total evil. There can be like combinations of that. One can become the other and vice versa, you know, and they can inhabit the same person or entity or spirit even. But in many ways, a lot of how we talk about it is in sort of contrasting good, evil, mm-hmm. up, down, you know, these push-pull that kind of setup, you know, that is the structure of political rhetoric sometimes. So I've been thinking just generally about specifically good and evil in the knowing that it's not so cut and dry. Mm-hmm. There's gray between the black and white, but the way it is often understood is through religious terms and the faithful, mm-hmm. People who are devout. And it occurred to me that they understand and study the good and through faith. And a lot of the teachings are in fact ancient, right? From whatever writings, they subscribe to, or right. deities, or whatever instructs this faith. That those teachings are often parable. They're often something to reflect on and apply. You would apply it yourself, or perhaps take something away in your everyday life, in your own toil or understanding of faith. But to me, I don't think that you can be so certain about how to identify based on such ancient understandings, if they're even as instructive as they're to be.
Right.
Because a lot of those are, well, they're not as up to date as far as storytelling, and to draw out from them, it can get twisted. It can be interpreted in different ways to different people.
Okay. Well,
and I don't understand that. I don't think that there's as much of familiarity. Well, I mean, there's a big understanding of the good.
You seem to be struggling. I mean, I see you've got six books open, hardcover books, and you seem to really be kind of diving into this historical view of good versus evil.
The actual practice, I think a lot in the Christian faith, is that we model from the teachings and we follow in follow sorts of leaders and the conclusions of some of these things to be good, or to aspire to the good, to be a good person or a good citizen, or we recognize the good in others, the good in a story.
It's easy.
So that we can interpret that and enact to be like that.
Emulate.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm reaching for the stuff. But my point is, if you're so consumed with the result of the story getting to the good,
right,
and you're so wrapped up in that, the lesson and finding the good, finding what to model after. That was the other thing I was saying. What are we're modeling after this, right, in our hypothetical faith? Well, how on earth do you recognize evil? What is evil?
You're struggling with that.
Because your focus isn't necessarily on that.
I thought you were struggling trying to find good, but you're trying to find evil.
Well, you talk, the whole idea of those, it's all wrapped up modeling the good. So
I can help with this.
Do you know even what to look for?
You're trying to basically be able to recognize evil when you see it. Is that pretty much the gist of it?
Yeah, I'm saying that's missing. Yeah.
Okay. I'll reach out for some help here. Hang on.
And that's only if it's in such terms, right? If it is going to be that way, we're going to go contrasting like that.
How do you spell Gemini? Does anybody know?
Oh, wait.
No. This is the right way to answer this question.
I don't think that's a book. That's not.
No,
scripture.
This isn't a book. This is the way people answer questions now. So if you're struggling to find evil, hang on. I just asked Gemini, how do you recognize evil?
Is this the book of Gemini?
No.
Oh.
Let's listen though. To what Gemini says, verse 1. I hope this helps. Recognizing evil can be challenging, as it often disguises itself. However, some signs may help you identify it. Listeners, apply this where you may, but this, according to the latest artificial intelligence, is how you define or how you identify or recognize evil. And let's see, there are eight ways of identifying it. Number one, lack of empathy. Evil individuals often lack the ability to understand or share the feelings of others. They may seem indifferent to the pain and suffering they cause. Do you know anybody like that? Have you seen anybody like that?
Yes.
Okay, it was a rhetorical question, Kyle.
Number
two, manipulative behavior. They are often masters of manipulation using charm, guilt tripping, or other tactics to control others and get what they want. I think I've seen that a bit. Number three, deception and lying. Evil people frequently engage in deception and lying to achieve their goals. They may twist the truth or fabricate stories to manipulate situations. Listeners, have you seen anybody twist the truth recently or make up stories, try and fabricate things to their own ends? Any of that? Okay. Number four, exploitation of others. They tend to exploit others for their own benefit, using people as tools to achieve their selfish desires. How about that? Okay, and number five. Now, this is a good one. Disregard for rules and norms. Evil individuals often disregard rules, laws, and social norms, believing themselves to be above such constraints. You know, I read something recently where somebody was doing that. I can't think of the specifics just now, but it'll come to me. It'll come to me. Maybe listeners can help with this. Number six, sadistic tendencies. In some cases, they may exhibit sadistic tendencies, deriving pleasure from the pain and suffering of others. I don't doubt it. Number seven, lack of remorse. They generally lack remorse or guilt for their actions, even when they cause significant harm to others. And number eight, pattern of harmful behavior. Evil is not usually a one-time act, but rather a pattern of harmful behavior that persists over time. And it feels like this time will never end. In conclusion, it's important to remember that these signs are not always present in every evil individual, and some people may exhibit a few of these traits without being truly evil. However, if you notice a consistent pattern of these behaviors in someone, it's essential to be cautious and protect yourself from potential harm. I'd like to read that last sentence one more time, and this time address it to America. If you notice a consistent pattern of these behaviors in someone, it's essential to be cautious and protect yourself from potential harm.
Noted.
And I hope your search for evil is at an end, Kyle. It's all around us. And boy, okay, let's start with this. This is a gem here. You know, I'll go on record. I'll take the blame for this because initially, when this whole escapade started, I said that that J.D. Vance was going to be the sane one. He was going to be the adult in the room. But then he came up with this this just unbelievable quote over the weekend where he's upset at the fact that all the Republicans are upset that judges are weighing in, you know, as part of the judicial branch. That's what they're supposed to do. It's checks and balances. You've got Congress, you've got the president, you've got the courts, and they each have equal power. And this is the protection against somebody going nuts and taking too much power. Well, the judges are doing exactly what they're supposed to do and basically suspending, striking down, doing various things to the many unconstitutional proclamations and acts we've seen over the past couple of weeks. Now, J.D. Vance concluded that judges aren't allowed to control the executive's legitimate power. Well, judges exist for exactly that reason, to weigh in on whether executives have that power in the first place, whether they are allowed to do the things they're doing. And over the past week or so, we've seen many rulings where such decrees are put on hold while their constitutionality, their legality is examined. That is how it's supposed to work. This is the one thing that I've had some faith in over the past a couple of weeks as this is all playing out. Elon Musk, completely unelected and drunk with power, he also posted that the judge who ruled against him being able to peruse all of our data without any kind of restriction, he ruled that that judge should be impeached. Yeah. A corrupt judge protecting corruption. He needs to be impeached now, said Musk. I mean, you know, how is this guy able to do all of this? How does he have all this power? How is he able to inject himself into the most private of computer systems, the Department of the Treasury, Department of Education? So much private information is in there. And he marches in with his minions who have no clearance, no experience in this field. And they're basically just having, you know, a pizza party over there and just perusing all of these systems. God knows what they're copying. Not letting anyone else into the building. It's basically a coup. A coup by the people who won the election. Because, you know, it's one thing to win an election. You win an office and you're able to push legislation through. But when that becomes inconvenient to you, when you want to go even faster and you just stop obeying the rules altogether, then it's no longer democracy. Then it's a coup. And at some point, and I don't know when it's going to happen, but at some point, people have to react to this. I'm deeply ashamed of the way Americans are reacting so far. I saw a poll over the weekend where more people support Trump now than ever. They like somebody who gets things done. Hey, I like someone who gets things done too. But we have process. We have, you know, a supposed democracy here. At least in theory. And when you basically sidestep any regulations, you know, jump over any barriers and just ignore any rules or laws, you're no longer working in the interest of the people. It's only a matter of time before they realize that. I know, it's incredibly slow. Any other country, you know, this kind of action, in other countries, the military would move in and would basically take these people out one way or another. We don't have that system, fortunately. And I hope I can continue to say fortunately, because the only thing that is going to stop them is outrage from all of us. It's not going to be Congress. And again, those who accuse us of not criticizing Democrats, only criticizing Republicans, sit back. You'll enjoy this. Democrats are completely useless. They are weak. They are spineless. They don't know how to connect with people. I wish there was another party that was able to stand up to Republicans even a little bit. But it hasn't emerged yet. Sure, there are lots of smaller parties that maybe could do it one day, but not now. Democrats are the closest thing we have. But it's pathetic. It's pathetic. I mean, you see them on TV, and we saw one guy who said that, the only way we're going to be able to do something is if Republicans choose to lose. If some Republicans just choose to stand up to Trump and lose their seats, like Liz Cheney did. Really? That's the big hope. That's what you're banking on. Or we get to listen to Chuck Schumer put us to sleep with his long stories and inaction. Look, you know, I'm on the same side as many of these people, but the way they go about it, there's no spirit there. You know, you have to raise your voice occasionally. Look at Parliament in Korea. You know how they deal with things there, or any Eastern European country. They, you know, there's passion, there's shouting, there's pushing sometimes. I know it's not polite, but I think we're past the days of being polite. It hasn't done anything for Democrats at all. Whereas being rude and abrasive, that's gotten Republicans everything, because the average person can identify with that, you know, and Democrats have to learn how to do that, you know, to be a little brusque sometimes and speak your mind. There are a few. I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders, I could listen to him all day. But the guy's like 95 years old. You can't expect him, you know, to lead the march all the time. There have to be more. There really have to be. And, you know, you're going to find... You're going to find people that say the right things, but you disagree with them on something. Well, that's no reason to condemn them. It's a reason not to stand with them on those things, but stand with them on the things that you do agree with and that they're passionate about. Because if they can bring out more people and inspire more people, then you have something. But right now, it's pathetic. It's utterly pathetic. You have more people in the streets of Philadelphia after the Super Bowl by far than throughout the entire country protesting the dismantling of our 250-year-old democracy. Yeah. We care about football more than we care about our future, our history, our institutions. Let me continue my attack on Democrats just for a moment. because this is just too good. I don't know if you caught this yesterday, but we have this mayor in New York City, Mayor Eric Adams. This guy's one of the most corrupt mayors I think we've ever had. Everybody knows it. I sound like Trump, but you know, it's basically, you know, the guy's been accused of all kinds of things. But he's been cozying up to Trump lately. Yeah, Democrat. Who the Democrats of New York City, the five boroughs, chose over more progressive candidates or just candidates who weren't ex-cops. You can't blame this one on Republicans because it was a foregone conclusion that a Democrat was going to win the race for the mayor. So in the primary, you had a choice of a bunch of Democrats. And whoever the Democrats chose in that primary, everyone knew would win the election. They chose Eric Adams. I could not believe it then. Still can't believe it now. Anyway, yesterday he gathered his top commissioners and officials to give marching orders under the new administration, the new federal administration. Do not criticize President Trump. Do not interfere with immigration enforcement. And trust the mayor. It was an hour-long meeting. It was held at the municipal building late on Friday. Actually, wait a minute. How could it happen on Monday and Friday at the same time? Okay, I'm not really sure. This is I'm reading from the report here. It happened either Friday or Monday, or maybe it happened on both days. Yeah, it says here the mayor began the meeting Monday by asking his top officials how they felt and that they shouldn't be shy about sharing. After some people expressed their concerns and asked for clearer guidance from the mayor, Adams ordered them to stop complaining and to keep their heads down and refrain from criticizing President Donald Trump and trust that he will make sure the city doesn't get federal grants pulled. This is the same Donald Trump, by the way, who is continuing to threaten congestion pricing, which I know will make a lot of people out there happy, but hey, it's working. The streets are cleaner. The traffic is moving better. More people are using mass transit. Money is going to the MTA. It's everything that we hoped for. But regardless, he also is threatening to get rid of bike lanes. You know, Kyle, we were in the city, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and we were basically reminiscing about how New York City used to be and how it's changed over the last decade. There are people riding bikes everywhere now. It's transformed so much. And he wants to dismantle all that. And why? Because people need to park their cars, because businesses are being hurt by not being able to park cars. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. And he's got this antiquated notion of what New York City should be. He doesn't even live there. We've got this. We don't need him barging in and destroying things that have been built. But this is the person that Mayor Adams is saying, don't criticize. Yeah, don't second guess him. And then later that same day, and I'm saying this is Monday now, that meeting took place. Later that same day, guess what happened? The Department of Justice, under orders from Donald Trump, dismissed all the federal corruption charges against Mayor Eric Adams.
What do you know?
Is there anyone out there that thinks these things are not related? This is corruption as corrupt as you can possibly be. It doesn't count because nobody's going to prosecute the guy. He is now in Donald Trump's club of being able to commit whatever crime you want and get away with it. And that is how the system works.
The thing I heard, I think, is that it was a pardon without prejudice or something. There's some characterization of it that means that if he falls out of favor, these can be brought back. So he's on kind of like
He's on a short leash.
Yeah, he's on timeout or something. Yeah, he has to like be a good mayor and otherwise, or else.
a good mayor, not a good mayor to the people of New York City, but a good mayor to Trump.
Right, right. I don't know 100% if that's true, but I think that's some of what I heard in the reporting today. Someone can correct us.
Here's OTW the good news. At 2600. Here, OTW at 2600 is our email address. Yes, thank you. Here is the good news. His office is up this year. Now, Democrats, you have another chance. You have another chance to get it right. Now, I'm not really an Andrew Cuomo fan. I do think he did a lot of good things. I think, you know, we have him to thank for everything from Grand Central Madison to the new Kosciuszko Bridge to various other things that actually got done.
LaGuardia
Airport got rebuilt. Not the most enticing personality, let's put it that way. And I know a lot of people are uncomfortable with him, but I do think he would be a vast improvement over Eric Adams as mayor. And you don't have to, you know, win a popularity contest other than the election to do a good job. I just want to see somebody who is strong and somebody who has a history of standing up to utter nonsense. And he's already done this with Trump. I don't know if he'll continue to do that with Trump. I hope he would. But failing somebody else who is beating Adams in the polls, I think this is a perfect example of, okay, let's set aside our problems for now, our dislikes, and see if this might be an option. Otherwise, you might wind up with somebody even more aligned with Trump running the city. And who does that benefit? Yeah. Tough times. But tough questions that have to be answered. Now, this just happened today, just to give you an idea of how crazy things have gotten. There's an event in the Oval Office today at the White House. The White House blocked an Associated Press reporter from attending. Do you know why, Kyle?
Not yet.
You'll love this.
Why?
They demanded the news agency alter its style on the Gulf of Mexico, which Trump has childishly renamed the Gulf of America. The reporter tried to enter the White House event as usual this afternoon and was turned away. That's according to the AP executives. The highly unusual ban, which Trump officials had threatened earlier in the day, unless the AP changed the style on the Gulf, could have constitutional free speech implications. Julie Pace, who is senior vice president and executive editor of the Associated Press, called the administration's move unacceptable. This is an Associated Press story, by the way. It is alarming that the Trump administration would punish AP for its independent journalism, Pace said in a statement. Limiting our access to the Oval Office based on the content of AP's speech not only severely impedes the public's access to independent news, it plainly violates the First Amendment. The Trump administration made no immediate announcements about the move, and there is no indication any other journalists were affected. Trump has long had an adversarial relationship with the media. On Friday, the administration ejected a second group of news organizations from Pentagon office space. AP style is not only used by the agency, the AP style book is relied on by thousands of journalists and other writers globally. And just because you want to call something a particular name in this country does not mean that's what the rest of the world will do. Demands by a president that a news organization comply with an order to change its content would seem to run counter to the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Remember that? Which bars the government from impeding the freedom of the press. Now, this week, Google Maps began using Gulf of America, saying it had a long-standing practice of following the U.S. government's lead on such matters. The other leading online map provider, Apple Maps, was still using Gulf of Mexico, so that tells you something about integrity there. The AP said last month, 3 days after Trump's inauguration, that it would continue to refer to the Gulf of Mexico, while noting Trump's decision to rename it as well. As a global news agency that disseminates news around the world, the AP says it must ensure that place names and geography are easily recognizable to all audiences. Now, Trump has also decreed that the mountain in Alaska, known as Mount McKinley, and then by its indigenous name, Denali, be shifted back to commemorating the 25th president. President Barack Obama had ordered it renamed Denali in 2015. AP said last month it will use the official name change to Mount McKinley because the area lies solely in the United States, and Trump has the authority to change federal geographical names within the country. All right, so if it's within the country and he changes the name, they have no choice. This seems like a good policy. I don't like the fact that they're renaming Denali back to McKinley, but it's within the country that he's currently ruling. He cannot rename things outside the country. And we don't own the Gulf of Mexico. Neither does Mexico, for that matter. But that's what it's called for hundreds of years.
Can we call Capitol Hill Capitol Lump?
Well, if you can hack into Google Maps, you can do anything you want.
No, they have a long-standing tradition of, what I guess, doing whatever the government says. I love that they are... of the opinion that they have tradition, Google tradition. Imagine that. What exactly is that? To make products no one needs outside of their core business.
Who knows? Hey, King Abdullah was in town. King Abdullah II from Jordan was visiting Trump today. They had an interesting news conference. Trump is insisting, and this happened after last week's show, even though we were kind of predicting it. Trump announced that the United States was going to take Gaza. Yeah, we're just going to take Gaza and kick all the Palestinians out. And they were going to like it. I'm not even making any of this up. This is real. He sat the King of Jordan down next to him and insisted that he would move forward with his vision for the United States to take the Gaza Strip, move its residents to Jordan and other Arab nations, and redevelop the heavily damaged territory and not let the Palestinians back.
See, all of these so-called leaders, they're not... This isn't strength, right? And
it's capitulation.
Absolutely. Or Google itself, it's not a position of strength to substantiate this stuff. And... It's validating it. So the play here, it's funny, or not funny at all, but the leader's coming, he's kind of setting them up. He's doing these like state visits. Oh, they come to you know, honor the request of this American leader. And then he says the wildest thing and they have to like navigate reacting to it in real time in front of our entire press corps. And that, mealy mouth sort of like however they navigate that sort of indirectly validates his wild claim.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it's
weakness.
King Abdullah, I don't think he's capitulating so much.
No.
It's just kind of sitting back right now and being as diplomatic as he can possibly be.
But the visit itself is a backdrop that... Trump can use to mm-hmm. sort of substantiate his claim to be so powerful.
Right, right. Well, okay, so what King Abdullah said was, I think the point is, how do we make this work in a way that is good for everybody? Obviously, we have to look at the best interest of the United States, of the people in the region, especially to my people of Jordan. We will be in Saudi Arabia to discuss how we can work with the president and with the United States. So I think let's wait until the Egyptians can come and present it to the president and not get ahead of ourselves. Now, keep in mind that King Abdullah, the Saudis, and virtually every other country in the region except for one, have strongly condemned this plan, which is absurd on its face. I think that's basically as much as you can hope for somebody to say in a situation like this. He's not going to sit next to him and condemn him to his face. I get that, but I do not expect him to support this plan at any time in the future. I'll be very surprised if he does. He did, however, say that his country would take in 2,000 children from Gaza who have cancer or are sick and provide them with medical treatment. And that's great. Boy, I wish we did things like that. I remember when we used to. But Trump insisted the U.S. would be in control of Gaza and that all the territory's population would leave. It's just, I mean, it's not a funny situation, but it's hilarious to listen to the way he describes things, and he actually believes this. The Palestinians or the people that live now in Gaza, I'm not sure what he's referring to there, will be living beautifully in another location. I believe we'll have a parcel of land in Jordan. I believe we'll have a parcel of land in Egypt. We may have someplace else, but I think when we finish our talks, we'll have a place where they're going to live very happily and very safely. Spoken out of the mouth of somebody who has absolutely no understanding of history, of the conflict in the region, of anything, really. I'm not going to get into the history. I mean, you're welcome to study as much as you want, but, you know, there have been references to Palestinians in that region that date back to the 1100s B.C. Yeah, so that's a long time to have history in a region. And to just uproot people and say, no, you're going to go over here now because we say so, it's not going to go over well. Let's not be fooling ourselves into thinking that this simplistic, you know, way of dealing with an issue is going to accomplish anything except more heartache. Look, okay, get rid of the penny. All right, you know what? If I'm going to give anything to Trump, I'll give him that. I don't know, where do all the pennies go? Every year we have to make more pennies. Why is that? We make a bunch of pennies. They're your pennies. Leave them. I mean, it's not like we're swallowing them, and if we do, they're going to come out.
People accumulate them. They don't spend them in the same way they do other forms, other denominations. So basically, they get stored by people, and as you know, the population increases.
Why are people doing that?
They're not returning them at the same rate that they need them in, that they've replenished them in the in circulation. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense what you're saying. It doesn't make sense what they're doing.
Not even 2 cents?
No, why are they doing that? I don't understand that at all. Why would you hold on to pennies? I mean, what are you waiting for?
Well, because people don't value them the same way they do like a quarter.
So I get rid of things I don't value. I don't save things I don't value.
But do you take it to exchange it and, you know, like roll them up in the same way? I mean, well, think about how long it takes you to accumulate enough coins to be even marginally interested in rolling your coins up and taking them to the bank. You maybe do that every like 10 years. Now that's like, think, or if you do that yourself, you might go to a service and do that. But even that, you get a percentage taken from it and you may do it infrequently. And there are ever more people collecting all of those pennies, right? As the population increases, you then run into situations where there's less of them in circulation. I don't know. I'm not a total expert on currency in this way, but that's kind of how it, I think, goes, is that it's just so undervalued that they're not collected in the same way as you might use a dollar that you have or a quarter that you find, you know, you can spend that more readily. But the trouble to take pennies, like I read this thing one time where if you find a penny on the ground, it's not worth your time to pick it up unless you pick it up within 15 seconds.
Wait, why is that?
I don't know.
What does the 15 seconds have to do with it?
I don't know. Like your opportunity cost, the relative like work that you have to invest for what you're actually picking up, and then the time it would take you to accrue enough to go and spend it somewhere else.
You know, I don't like people who come up with figures like that. I'm sorry.
It could be totally made up.
I'm walking down the street. You're going to tell me what my time is worth for me to bend down and pick something up?
But see, that's why we all believe that we don't need them now. Well, I mean, I'm exaggerating. We don't all necessarily believe that, but that's how they're talking about the cost of producing them, because I don't know. They keep flying out the door and nobody brings them back. I don't know. Someone tell us. OTW at 2600.com.
Yeah, and if you have a huge crate of pennies somewhere, feel free to bring a wheelbarrow down to WUSB and donate them to us. We'll figure it out. We'll wrap them up and give them to the bank or whatever, and maybe it'll help save WUSB as well.
Like, if you spent your whole life picking up a penny one after the other within that time frame, how much could you possibly pick up, like, in actual dollars, given the average lifespan?
You know, like I said, let them have this. Get rid of pennies. Well, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to the pennies that are out there that all these people are collecting. They should still be worth something, I think, but I don't know. This is something I can let go of.
Maybe it will become the first form of American currency that is returned in a digital form, you know, like basically accept that change in some sort of digital format instead, like whatever extra pennies within like 4 cents or something, unless they get rid of the nickel too, then maybe there's a bigger argument. But there's, I guess, just this thing of like, well, we don't really use cash that much anyway, and they want to take it away. I think you may be right. I don't know that we'll miss them. Or maybe because we're not producing them, they'll become more sought after as far as reclaiming them.
I have a 1909 penny, by the way. It's the first year they made pennies. And I don't know where it is at the moment, but I do know I have it someplace. And it's one of those wheat pennies, and the very first one. It's not in good shape. It's not worth much, but it's mine. You know, I was perusing Twitter the other day. Boy, that place has turned into hell. It's sad, because it used to be such a good place to communicate with people. And now it's just, you know, if you want to connect with the right wing, I guess that's really the only thing you can do. But there's this Doge account now, you know, Department of Government Efficiency, that they made up, that Elon Musk is in charge of. And he just keeps tweeting all this hatred, both from his personal account and from the Doge account, and silencing people who don't agree with him, or basically just acting like a bully. But this is one of the things, it really got to me. They're going through the Department of Education now. The Department of Education, they're the new enemy. So what they're doing is they're going through their computer systems, you know, just letting these idiots in, and they're terminating grants. They're just going in there, terminating grants that have been agreed to. Yesterday, this was a tweet. Today, the Department of Education terminated 29 DEI training grants totaling $101 million. I think that's what MM stands for. One sought to train teachers to, quote, help students understand/interrogate the complex histories involved in oppression and help students recognize areas of privilege and power on an individual and collective basis. First of all, what the hell is wrong with that? That sounds interesting. Students should understand the complex histories involved in oppression. Oppression is something that's been going on forever. Why would we not want to know more about oppression and how that works? And to help students recognize areas of privilege and power on an individual and collective basis? I think that's pretty relevant to any society. But somehow this is seen as the enemy. Teaching students about injustice and unfairness and how people have been oppressed in various ways. That is a part of history. Now, it's also interesting. Remember the first sentence here. Today, the Department of Education terminated 29 DEI training grants. DEI, of course, being the enemy. Anything involving diversity. By saying that they terminated these grants totaling $101 million, they don't tell you how much this particular grant that they're mocking actually cost. But whatever it costs, I think it's worth it, because this is how people get educated. And we're not talking about being indoctrinated. We're talking about being educated. I haven't seen the syllabus. I don't know what they're saying to these teachers to train them. But I imagine if there was something objectionable there, we would have heard about it. Instead, it's just the idea of helping students understand what oppression is. That's the enemy. Now, you know, I was hoping that while Elon Musk was spouting forth this hatred and this idiocy, that maybe other people would counter that, but no, that's not what I found at all. I'm going to read you some comments. I'm just reading these for the first time. I just went to the Twitter page and scrolled down, and here are some comments. DEI will D-I-E. Thank God. Then hunt down its mutations and name changes and all government-supported racism. Because it's racism if you're anti-oppression, because then you're anti-white people. And you'll see that basically reflected in Trump's latest remarks about South Africa and how it's a horribly racist regime against white people. Okay, let's read another one. My God, what an insane world. This is irrelevant and divisive. And for what? Confuse kids? Make them hate themselves? Take confidence and strengths away from them? Demean them? Stump their intelligence and growth? There is no upside. Okay, none of that was in the description here. How would you learn about oppression and historical unfairness and various things like that and wind up hating yourself? Where does it say that this is Jimmy's fault? You know, you're missing an ingredient here. If you see something in there that says every white person is guilty, yeah, that's too much, but I'm not seeing that. I don't see that at all. Elon Musk, Donald Trump, they see that everywhere. Okay, here's another one. Dear Department of Education, math. Kids need math and reading and writing. They don't need your social experiments. Thank you. School choice. Parents need school choice. Okay, meaning, get away from the black kids and put all your kids in a school where you're more comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, your Orthodox evangelical madrasas it will fund, I'm sure. I'm sure that'll be great for society. I don't see the material harm in... Well, I think what is the harm in teaching this stuff? And the real stupidity in this, in my mind, and I've heard this point, and I think it's strong, they're pulling these programs to make things efficient, and they're calling it waste, fraud, and abuse, which is like a classic Republican go-to line when they've no other point, to basically justify a massive tax cut that is looming. Like, that is what will happen. Mark my words. This is all about disintegrating and shrinking the government to minuscule size, and all of this money will find its way into the coffers of the 1%, the very people that were behind Trump on the dais at inauguration, and all of us be damned.
I have been scrolling the entire time you've been speaking, Kyle. I have not seen one post on Twitter that said anything in opposition to this mockery here. It's just unbelievable. How is Doge doing more than the Department of Education? The DEI grants were just a covert way to push political agendas in classrooms, and now it's over. Keep in mind, you know, Congress already agreed to this, and that Congress consists of Republicans as well, and they didn't find it objectionable. And yet Elon Musk, he has the final say now. President Trump will make education great again. Finally, $101 million that won't be spent teaching kids to hate each other. I didn't know kids were oppressing each other, but apparently that's what they're afraid of, that kids are being blamed for oppression over the centuries. Wow. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning how insane this is getting, how filled with hatred people are, and how weak the rest of us are. You know, we have to raise our voices and, you know, get a little offensive to those people that are saying these nonsensical things.
You know what organizations have good voices, I think, or very strong voices? The Association of Federal Government Employees, they had a rally today, and they have some strong words. I think some of the labor unions, the leadership in those ranks know how to speak. They know how to fight on behalf of their membership. And I would say the Democrats and good Republicans, were there any, could take some notes.
Yeah, yeah. And the rest of us who aren't politicians, you know, we need to stand up too. We need to make our voices heard. And we can do that every day in one way or another. Talking to our friends, writing things, thinking for ourselves. Even just having a critical eye towards the things that we're being force-fed by the mass media. And you'll see the mass media slowly turning more towards the oppression that we're currently being threatened with, because they're afraid. You know, 60 Minutes is being sued by Donald Trump and being threatened by the FCC. Why? Because they aired an interview with Kamala Harris that was edited. The unedited portions were submitted as part of this, made public, and showed absolutely nothing out of the ordinary. Interviews get edited. That's how they work. Fox News does the same thing. But it's quite possible 60 Minutes will settle and agree to something with Trump, because the corporate overlords of that network are afraid. They're afraid that a merger won't be approved. They're afraid that they'll be demonized. And that comes first. Journalists come second. So that could be a really, really, really bad thing. That's why it's important for you as individuals to stand up. It's easier for us. We don't have all these different promises we have to keep.
I'm up.
All right, you're standing up, Kyle. But the rest of us, we have to sit down now and play the outro music because we're out of time. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. We didn't get to half the stories we needed to get to tonight. You know, I have to stop printing out all these stories because, you know, we only have an hour and there's way too many of them. But we will get to them. We'll get to whatever else happens this week. And we will continue to be here, as will the many other voices of WUSB.
We'll make sure there are opportunities, and we might even take some phone calls next time.
That would be nice. That would be great. All right, hang in there, folks, and keep listening. See you next time.
deserve. You're going to get what you deserve. Bow down before the one you serve. You're going to get what you deserve.